The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Attention! The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next! Please stand by.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Thank you, Daryl Johnston. Hello and welcome to another production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me on the panel for this edition of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is Brad Ludwig and Corey Scott. Hey, guys!
Hello!
Corey, when was the last time you were on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club?
It's been a while, Dave.
Fairly
busy. I think you just didn't want to burden yourself with some of the language that I use on my other show.
No, I'm fine with that, okay? Last week, it was like a toilet in here. It was a veritable crap storm of profanity on last week's episode. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Who was on?
We had the guys from, help me out, Brad.
Inked.
Yeah.
The Inked
Geeks, studios, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would do it.
Yep. A couple of guys from Maine, and they are potty mouths. Actually, you know what? Brad started it. Brad was the first one that swore. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, I'm still going to try to play it nice here for the group.
Well, I have
ass.
I have my paper handy, and I have a pen handy, so I will make notes as to where the swearing takes place. So, if it happens, fine. If it doesn't, all the better.
If it happens, it'll probably be my fault.
Yes. So, we'll have to thank Brad in advance. Thanks, Brad, for starting this
work. Welcome.
Thanks, Brad.
I enjoy wrecking people's lives. You're welcome.
You're not wrecking anything. We do have some guests to welcome, and one of them is a returning guest. The other is brand new to the show, but together they make another great podcast on the Galactic Netcast Network. Our guests this week are the hosts of Exploring the X-Files, and it is a production of Galactic Netcasts and Wolf King Studios. It's our first joint production, and it's going swimmingly. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, father and son Sean and Kevin Burns. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Welcome back, Sean.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Welcome for the first time, Kevin.
Thanks. I'm excited to be on.
We're going to talk about the X-Files a little bit later, but you guys have seen all the episodes of the revival series. Is it a winner, or do you think they need to do some work on it for if they do a second season of the revival? I want to start with that. We'll go into more detail later on, but just a general impression of the new episodes.
Go ahead, Kevin. You go first on that one.
I would definitely say that. I mean, there were a few things that were a little hit and miss, different parts of the individual episodes, but looking at the run as a whole, I would definitely say that this was a good six episodes that they gave us.
Do you think six was not enough? Like, I was sitting there going, oh my God, it went by really, really fast. Do you think it could have used more episodes?
I think it definitely could have. Yeah, I think I would have enjoyed it if there were more, but on the same hand, I can kind of see where if it wasn't certain that they were going to come back for a full-on revival of the series where they wouldn't want to have to put in the money and the resources and everything to do a longer season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is like...
I think
they
did a really good job of fan service, of doing enough of the old stuff to make it really good for the existing fans. And they sort of transitioned towards the end into the new style of storytelling, the stuff you see like on Walking Dead and Breaking Bad, more of the more contemporary storytelling style as opposed to the 90s, more X-File-y type of show. So I think overall they've positioned themselves really well to come back. I'm definitely hoping that's what happens. So.
Okay, do you guys want to just kind of briefly describe your podcast, Exploring the X-Files?
Sure. It started last summer. Kevin and I were talking about just what makes a podcast, and one of the examples I gave him was you could just take an old television show or, you know, one that's currently on, and you just start watching episodes and talk about it. And I used X-Files as an example, and Kevin had never really seen much or any of the X-Files prior to us starting this project, and I was a huge fan back then, and said, hey, wouldn't it be fun if we actually did this, and kind of got the perspective of someone who was already a fan and someone who was brand new to it. And so we started actually recording over the summer, and then they made the announcement that they were coming back with the 6 episodes, and we thought, well, it makes a lot more sense to wait for that and help use that to help launch the show, and that's kind of what we've done. So, you know, starting, we had a little internet problem last night. We had bad storms, so the show for this week hasn't been recorded yet. We're going to do that tomorrow, and then starting next week, we'll start back with the 1993 pilot and just start going through them one at a time, watching them together and talking about it.
Cool. Looking forward to revisiting those old episodes, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Hey.
Now, since this is Kevin's first time through watching the whole series, when you finish watching all the original seasons, are you going to rewatch these last 6 episodes again to kind of like get it all done in a row?
Probably. Because we're going to talk about the movies, too. There's been some discussion about the books. There's a, what was it, Kevin, a PS2 game or a PS3 game?
PlayStation 2 game.
Came
out a few years back. It was like 2006-ish, I want to say.
So we're going to see about getting our hands on that and see what else we can do with that and, you know, other tie-in kind of properties to it and see what we can do.
Well, it might take you guys a while. There's a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah.
Especially 200 episodes.
Yeah, and especially if they come back with a revival of the full series, we're going to have a lot more to discuss.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you all, and may God have mercy on your soul.
We may need that.
All right. Okay, so this is the podcast where we talk about everything sci-fi related. And before we get into the meat and guts of it, I want to thank Alpha Geek Radio for having us on their network, letting us stream our audio and video live at alphageekradio.com. And everybody that's listening and watching, you can also follow us on follow Galactic Netcasts and this show in particular on Twitter. You can join our Facebook group, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and all the links to those are available on our website, which is gncasts.com. All right, time for the news. DC Comics. I know Corey is chomping at the bit to talk about this. Aren't you, Corey?
We'll see.
Okay, there's something called Rebirth happening at DC Comics. And Jeff Johns made some comments that it's not a reboot. It's more like the recent Star Wars Episode 7, okay? So just bear with me here real quick. First up, Jeff Johns said, Rebirth is an event aimed at longtime comic fans who know the stories and the history, though they're trying to keep it open enough to where new fans could still jump on and follow along. He likened it to the recent Star Wars, The Force Awakens, as in something fans will love, but newbies are able to jump on and enjoy the ride. Now, wasn't the New 52 aimed almost exclusively at new fans?
It certainly didn't seem to be aimed at old fans, and that seems to be part of what the frustration was about, is it was a... They also said that that wasn't a reboot of the universe. I'm not sure exactly what the hell that was. And I don't think anybody there was either, and that seemed to be the problem. But I think it's, of course, when you're talking about relaunching your entire line of books, you want to compare it to something with middle to mild success as the recent Star Wars movie. And that should definitely make it seem like, oh, well, then maybe I should look at that. We still don't really know what this is. It's hinted at it's going to try to take some of the pre-New 52 continuity, bring it back into play, work with some of the things that have happened in the New 52 and make sense of it in a way that they've done before with things like Zero Hour and some of the other relaunches that they've done, not necessarily Crisis. Crisis was essentially a brand new startup of the entire universe. And so how far back do they want to go? Do they want to go to the 80s when they did Crisis? Do they want to go to the original continuity before that? Do they want to go all the way back to the silver and the golden ages of comics? I don't know. All I care about is, are you making good comics? Are you making good stories?
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like what happened with the New 52 is that there was nobody really looking at what was being done. So people who were working on the same character in two different books, Grant Morrison was writing Superman younger in Action Comics, and George Perez was writing him as the modern day in the Superman title. George didn't know what he could and couldn't use and what the status quo of this character was, because Grant was still writing the past version in this other book. So he was constantly being like, oh, I want to use Lois Lane here. Oh, you can't use Lois Lane. Okay, can I use the Daily Planet at all? We're not really sure right now, George. Just write something else. And they kept making him rewrite the stuff that he was turning in. So he, a big professional, like a giant in the industry, wound up walking away from DC entirely because of this. So that was really frustrating. I think what is going on right now is Geoff Johns, who is looked at as being sort of a continuity maven, he takes things that have existed before and makes them work with things that exist now, and they all get to kind of coexist and you get the best of everything. He's being looked at as the leader of this new try, and that has a lot of people hopeful. Mm-hmm. Is that we'll get things like we had with the Justice Society and the Silver Age, and maybe Superman, who isn't just such a super jerk, and a Titans book that makes sense, maybe, and we'll understand why there were five Robins at some point or another. But until we see who's writing these books, who's drawing these books, we don't know if they're going to be just the same people who already messed up the last batch or not. And that's a problem.
Now, Geoff Johns has written a couple of series, Rebirth series, right, in the past?
Yes, he did the Green Lantern Rebirth, which was greatly received and brought back Hal Jordan without discounting the other Green Lanterns, such as Kyle Rayner, Guy Gardner, and John Stewart. He made it all work. And he didn't unwrite anything. He just took the continuity and kind of made it all make sense as to why there was this character called Parallax for a while that was Hal Jordan as an evil character. He did it in a non-destructive way, and that appeased the fans. And then he did Flash Rebirth. And Flash Rebirth basically brought back Barry Allen in much the same way, except all the other Flash stuff kind of got shunted to the wayside. And now Wally West, who was the Flash for 20-some years and was the Flash to a lot of people, the only Flash, disappeared entirely. That Wally West doesn't exist in the New 52. There's a totally new take on him, and a lot of people aren't really happy about that. And they're not happy with what they've done with Donna Troy. So there's a lot of confusion as to what do they want to take from this new continuity at all to integrate into these old things. And are those other characters coming back or not? So we've had a great rebirth. We've had a mediocre at best rebirth. We don't know what we're getting with this rebirth.
A couple more details on this is DC Universe Rebirth number one. He's going to be answering a lot of questions. That's going to be coming out on May 25th. Also, Action Comics and Detective Comics are going back to their original numbering. Who did that noise? Is that
me.
Brad? Why?
Because I'm going to make this explicit right now. I'm tired of DC f***ing in my mouth. That's why.
Okay, 1511.
Yes, right. Mark it, because I'm very passionate about that.
Now, something that I haven't done the math to figure out, they say they're going back to the original numbering. Are they going back to the numbering before they changed the new number ones in the new 52? Or are they including those 52 issues in the numbering?
I'm sure that they're going to include it.
See, that's the thing. It would be kind of nice if it would be very telling if they just skipped it entirely and they just said, yeah, where we were with the number right before that moment, we pick up on the issue right after. Then we'd have more of an idea as to whether or not the new 52 is just completely going away because it's so befuddled. It makes total sense that these books that are in the 900s now, that they want to get to that 1,000th issue of each of them. It was ridiculous that we had these long-standing books at such high numbers, and they were just like, well, we're just going to tank that and put them back to number one. It's like, if you're going to keep anything, keep that. It was a big fart on the heritage of these characters.
Yeah, it brings back some legacy, doesn't it?
And I don't want to sound like the curmudgeon-y old man that's just like, oh, you can't change my stuff. I was totally on board with the 52, or they did a weekly for 52 weeks, and they like did this wonderful all-inclusive story. They realigned things.
Almost.
They brought back, well, they realigned a lot of things, and they gave us back 52 Earths and said, hey, everything that you remembered, here's Earth 2, and here's some of the stuff that's there. And, you know, they had a great premise and setup. And then they came up with Flashpoint and just peed on everything.
Flashpoint, which was right after Final Crisis, which itself was changing a lot of things. It brought back Aquaman, it brought Swamp Thing and Constantine over to the regular DC Universe, and then they immediately went into their next event and said, we're going to wipe all that out.
And it was such a colossal waste.
Yes,
but everything that everybody did to make something that was actually good, it made sense, and if they were going to move forward, great. And then they decided to restructure everything, starting with Barry Allen, and just pee on everybody and put everything completely in flux. So if you were somebody who, like myself, who had collected for a long period of time and went, okay, 52, great, and now here's the universe, great. And then they brought in Flashpoint, and everything stopped making sense.
And who wrote Flashpoint?
Exactly. That made me sad. Me very sad.
Now, it's rumored that Flashpoint wasn't meant to end the way that it did, and we weren't supposed to get this giant rebooted universe, that was something that just kind of came down the pipe as things were already started. And that's why it seems like there was no solid plan for the new 52 when it happened. It's just like everything's going to reboot except for Batman and except for Green Lantern. We're going to try to keep those continuities intact, except we're going to get rid of some characters that don't exist at all anymore, like Stephanie Brown, even though we reference her in some of the books that are continuing. It really was just, it was a pile of errors. And after seeing what Geoff Johns had done to fix the continuity for characters like Hawkman, because he had gotten so screwed up post-Crisis on Infinite Earths, and what we'd seen would happen to the Legion of Superheroes because of Crisis and them having to go through all these things to fix that, I can't believe that they made such base mistakes again, seemingly worse, where we had references to the original Titan team in the first issue of the Red Hood book, and a lot of those characters never existed.
Yeah.
But people are saying them like, oh, yeah, you should remember these guys, right? Nope, don't remember them. But you do. And how do you? So it was a lot of just nobody thought it through. John's being in charge. I think that he is thinking these things through. You see the video of him doing the announcement. He looks tired. He looks like he's been working on this a lot.
Well, he's on the goddamn apology tour is what it is. There's got to be a point where you work for a company and somebody somewhere screwed everything and it came down the pipe and everybody must have went, oh, they're paying the bills. Woo, here we go.
But the problem is none of those people are fired.
And that's, somebody should be dead is what should happen. such a colossal.
Okay.
I'm just absolutely angry about this.
Okay.
I mean, that's the reason why I stopped collecting comics, frankly.
All right, before Brad's head explodes, let's Kevin and Sean have been a little bit quiet on this.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go. It's okay. I know that you're passionate, and you can say as much as you want, but I just wanted to see if Kevin and Sean had any kind of input on this, any feedback on this particular story before we move on.
I can say from my standpoint that this is just another example of why I could never get into comic books. I love the mythos of it. I love the stories that come out of it, but mostly in the movies and television formats, because the constant resetting and this storyline takes place in this timeline and things, it's just, it always has been a bit too much and been too muddled for my taste. So I'm happy to read an issue here and there when I happen to get one, but for the most part, I just look at it as a self-contained story and don't worry about like the continuity. So something like this where it's just resetting, changing things, it's going to be so far beyond me at this point that it's just, it's kind of, a non-issue for me.
But, also, Sean, would be a good time to jump in on a few of these titles. And the good news is they're reducing the price of each issue. So it's going to make it easier on the consumers to buy comics.
Now, if DC could possibly do something like Marvel has, where they have the Marvel Unlimited, I'd be all on board for that. It's just, to me, I don't... The other problem is where I am. I have to drive probably an hour to find a comic book store. So it's not anything that's readily available.
And DC just released an app today for the iOS and Android platforms. They haven't announced anything about a Marvel Unlimited style service yet, but it seems like that might be their next step.
You mean?
See, that's a game changer for me.
I've got the app right here, actually, if you can see it.
There you go.
Yeah, DC Unlimited. The first thing that you see is actually Jason Inman, because he's one of the hosts from... he's actually the host of one of my favorite podcasts called... what is it called? It's my favorite, and why can't I think of the name of it? Geek History Lesson.
That's like knowing your own phone number, Dave. You don't have to know it. If it's your favorite,
it's
the only thing that you listen to first.
It's in my feed. I click on it and play it, and it's fine.
I bet you know what my podcast is called, though.
Pot. That's an easy one. Kevin, are you a fan of comics at all in DC?
I never really got into comics a whole lot. I always had trouble with the overlapping stories and just going back on things and reinventing the wheel. And even when I did get into superheroes and comic books, I was always a much bigger Marvel fan, so.
Okay, fair enough.
He gets that from his mother's side of the family, apparently.
it took me like, when did I start, when did my interest in comics start, Brad? It was after we started Galactic Netcast in 2011, so I have not been really into them that long. And I'm still not into them as much as most people, but I still pick up a book from time to time, and I love the TV shows and the movies. So they've expanded that stuff so much, it's crazy.
And Kevin, there's some great X-Files comics that have been put out over the years, so that might be something that you can check into, at least get an appreciation for the art form.
Yeah, if you can find the Topps comics trade paperback, I would highly recommend that.
All right, let's take a look at them then.
Let's jump into our next story. Doctor Who is coming back to streaming on Amazon Prime, not on Netflix. Netflix-loving Doctor Who fans suffered a blow at the beginning of February as the show finally left the streaming service. The gap in our collective ability to binge-watch Doctor Who won't be long, though, as Amazon is bringing it back. Unfortunately, that means you're going to have to shell out $99 to get that Amazon Prime. And for some people that don't live in the United States, the Amazon Prime Video is not available with Amazon Prime. So if you're in the U.S., yay. If you're not, then you're out of luck. But it says that it's coming back. It's going to be on Amazon Prime sometime in March. Are we happy about this?
Doctor Who, for me, is a big, giant hole in my nerd grid. I have never seen an episode.
What?
I know. I know. I don't, I mean, I was aware of it, I guess, when I was younger, and it just, it was that weird show on PBS that I never really picked up on, the guy in the scarf.
The guy in the scarf. There's, you know, there's people at certain ages that they know, that's all they know of Doctor Who is the guy in the scarf.
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware of Doctor Who, like, you know, the sonic screwdriver and the TARDIS, and, you know, so I mean, I'm aware of it, but I've never actually seen one. So, and I do have Amazon Prime, so I guess I really don't have an excuse. I should probably at least watch a few episodes so that I can make an informed decision, as opposed to just my, what would that be, Anglophobic or whatever.
Well, okay, you know what? Brad could put together the definitive list of episodes that you should watch first. And maybe we can make that part of an assignment, then come back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club and we can talk about them, maybe. And have Daryl on.
Sounds like a plan.
And we could have Daryl on, too. That'd be fun.
You should have Matt Stein on that episode as well.
Yes. So this is going to happen sometime in March, we think. It's not confirmed yet, but all signs point to this. Now, Brad, are you a Amazon Prime subscriber? No.
Nessa is.
Yeah, Nessa is. Okay. So would you sit down and watch the Doctor Who episode? I know you've seen them all a number of times, right?
I'm kind of filling in. You know, I've seen most of Pertwee's run, all of Baker's run, all of Davidson's run, all of Colin Baker's run. I've seen most of McCoy. There are bits here and there that I'm missing.
But the modern day ones, are you up on the
modern day? Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Because it doesn't sound like they're going to have any classic Who. It's going to all be 2005 forward.
Yeah.
So are you excited?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's one of those things where I like to be able to just pop it on and, you know, if I want to feel good and depressed, I watch the Tenant, the Tenant run, especially towards the end of his tenure, as it were.
Yes,
got you're it. Welcome. I made the mistake of doing that before doing an episode of Adventure Party, and the pre-show, I'm like, I am so depressed, Glenn. I'm just stupid, and I watched some David Tennant Doctor Who, and he went, oh, yeah, yeah. Just that understanding of, yeah, if you want to be, you forget how depressing some of that is with, you know, towards the end, and you especially if you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's nice to watch, though, and have it available.
Our guests from last week, Nate Ward and Brandon Raymond, they're going to be super happy because they started a podcast about Doctor Who and just in time for the show to leave Netflix. So they're like, how are we going to do the show now that we don't have access to the show? So hopefully those guys have Amazon Prime or they're able to get Amazon Prime.
And that's the world that we live in right now, is that it's going to be, you like a show and you get to watch it for a while on one service, but then it jumps over to another one when the contracts run out.
Well, we discussed
this. We're going to be chasing these things.
Yeah, we discussed this last week, how it's almost unmanageable to have a subscription to all these services. Like the new Star Trek is going to be on the CBS, whatever that is. And, you know, Brad's totally against, you know, subscribing to that because he doesn't want one more service. So it's almost like adding all the fees up for all those different services is going to be as much or if not more than cable.
Yes, and that means cable wins.
Yep.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Story number three. BBC is bringing back The Twilight Zone as a radio drama. This is super exciting. I'm really excited about this. So 10 classic episodes of The Twilight Zone will be broadcast in the UK for the first time, but much like the show's trademark, there's a twist. The episodes will be reinvented as radio plays taken from Rod Serling's original TV scripts, thanks to BBC Radio 4 Extra. According to The Independent, veteran actor Stacey Keach, who's actually been involved with Twilight Zone for a long time as the host of the radio version of the show, because there's been a syndicated radio version of The Twilight Zone for a long time. So he's going to be the doing the monologues, which he's been doing on this other syndicated show for a long time. Other cast members throughout the series will include Jane Seymour, Jim Caviezel, Michael York. Logan. Logan's going to be the voice. Malcolm McDowell and Don Johnson. Who's the odd one out there?
One of these things is not like the others.
I think the odd one out would be Jane Seymour because she's the only woman in the list.
There is that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Don Johnson's talented, but he's not that talented is what I'm saying.
Producer Carl Ameri has owned the rights since 2002, which he obtained in part by promising to do the episodes justice in terms of production values and casting. Each episode will run 40 minutes. The series kicks off in March with Ambrose Bierce adaptation, an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
Oh!
I'm reading Ambrose Bierce right now, and yes, that is an amazing story.
That one actually was a 1962 Academy Award-winning short film before it was repurposed for The Twilight Zone. That's interesting. Okay.
Nice.
So the big question remains is how us here in America will get these. How do you think...
Fall off the back of the internet,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Unless they make them available legally somehow.
Yeah.
Like in podcast form or something.
The question is, why wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll be a podcast. Maybe they'll make them available after the original broadcast as podcasts.
Or at least do it a series through Audible or something. It just doesn't make sense to have productions like this happening and then saying, but it's only for this one country. Or I never understand that in the age of today is why are we producing things that are only meant for the BBC or only meant for America? Why can't we cut these deals? It's causing people to want to find them falling off the back of the internet because it's the only choice we have, and that just seems ridiculous to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed.
You give people a convenient and appropriately priced choice, they will pay for these things. We are happy to pay for great content, but you've got to make it so that we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to not be ridiculous and try to build 1,000 different stations so that we have to pay for each of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going back to the whole separate movie and TV streaming services. It's the exact same thing.
Yep. I would be interested to know what Kevin would think about this. Because, I mean, Twilight Zone was kind of big for us growing up, and they did have a kind of a reboot in the 90s. But
Although, Brad, the old classic episodes are pretty readily available, especially around the holidays. Yeah. Like Thanksgiving, don't they do the marathon? Or on Thanksgiving?
I think so. I think it's available on Hulu now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Or Netflix.
Kevin, have you seen the classic episodes, Kevin?
I feel like I've seen a few. It was never something that I watched like habitually or anything. I'm also familiar with a few because of people who have talked about them. I know my father's talked about them to me. My English teacher is a huge fan of The Twilight Zone, and so he's constantly talking about the reruns that he's seen or connecting something from a book we're reading to one of the episodes, but I'm not real familiar with the series.
What would be
it's been parodied all over the place, you know, every...
Oh, yeah, and I've seen some of the parody stuff that they've done of it.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I know you've seen the... I know you've seen my favorite one because we watched it together, but it was a few years ago, but it's the Burgess Meredith one with all the
books. I was going to say.
All the time in the world.
Yes, yep.
I finally have all the time to read the books, and then his glasses break, and then so I know you've seen that one.
Sean, spoiler, come on. What's wrong with you?
He's seen it.
No, that's a good one. I also like the person that's in the hospital bed that you think that it's the... somebody explain this, because I'm terrible explaining things.
That's the one where, the woman is in for surgery, and she's kind of the freak because everybody else in the world is very, very ugly.
Yeah.
And she wants to look ugly as everybody else. And every time she has this surgery, it's been unsuccessful.
Yeah, and it's revealed that she looks normal to us, but then you see the nurses and the doctors and they've got this like pig nose face. And then you realize that she's the freak.
Yeah. It's a very interesting turn on the whole wanting to be like everybody else, and being careful. Be careful what you wish for.
You know, I think our society needs a show like that these days. I think there needs to be a light shown on our prejudices and what's wrong with... I guess Black Mirror does that, though, right? That would be the updated version of The Twilight Zone, right?
I don't know.
Never seen that?
I haven't seen it yet, but I have heard of it, and that's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, is that I as much as I am looking forward to this project, they're redoing old episodes, and what I would like to see is new Twilight Zone or new content. It's not like we stopped knowing how to tell stories, and I keep looking for the great sci-fi and anthology writers of today to get those opportunities to do something like that. You know, in the 80s, we had amazing stories by Steven Spielberg. We should keep getting more things like that with all the stuff that's available to us now. Why do we just kind of want to keep retelling the classics?
Good question, Corey. I think you should write it and we could produce it. Let's do our own Twilight Zone.
I was going to say J.F. Dubow, but...
Yeah, J.F. Dubow would be perfect. Yeah, definitely. Now, what kind of stories do you think they could tell in this? Like, what things could they tackle if they did an updated version of The Twilight Zone? Just throwing that out there.
Oh, God. What particular stories could they redo?
No, like, what issues could they tackle as stories in a Twilight Zone-esque way?
I mean, we're already living in some of the stories now when you consider the whole thing of Big Brother and the way technology is rooted into our lives. We are in that science fiction. So what we have to do is not look at what we have today, but look at where we're going, look in the future of what's ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cult of celebrity is probably a big thing that could be tackled and done interesting things with. The idea that everybody can be famous and therefore fame starts to mean nothing after a while. I think that there's a lot of things that we could kind of pick away at society and deconstruct to make some very interesting and compelling stories.
Or the vainness of society now, right? The whole Instagram, you know, look at me, take 20 selfies a day of yourself kind of thing.
And the entirety of falseness. We created the internet because it could hold every bit of information around the world, and yet we overflow it with entire... distruthfulness, and people just look at it and accept that that's reality. Is we say, oh, well, here's this meme, and it's a story that has no truth or backing to it at all, but people just keep reposting it, and it becomes a truth. It becomes a narrative that's more important than what the truth actually was. There's some amazing things that we could do in this kind of series now, and I wish that there was somebody who was spearheading that.
Politicians that... promise
yes.
all these things or don't make any promises. They just promise, you know, gonna make a better America and is a total jerk. They could do something with that, right? Like maybe it turns out it's actually Hitler or something. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
I mean, sci-fi is a mirror to society. It is at its best, it's reflecting the things that you already are seeing, and it just paints it into a picture that maybe makes you look at it a little bit differently and realize the things that are wrong or the things that are right or the things that you should be focusing on more. And there's a lot of opportunity.
All right, let's tackle one more story in the news here. And this is one that I know because I asked you guys whether you wanted to talk about this or not. And you are all very enthusiastic about it. Danny Pudi, is that how you pronounce his last name?
Pudi.
Okay. Danny Pudi, Alan Tudyk.
Tudyk.
Tudyk?
Yes.
Christina Kirk join NBC's DC Comics comedy pilot Powerless. The trio joins Vanessa Hudgens in the... is it Hudgens?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know these people. I don't know how to pronounce their last name. I know who they are. I just don't know how to pronounce their last names. They join her in the superhero workplace comedy. All actors cast so far are set for series regular roles. And just remember, this is a pilot. It's only a pilot so far. So that means it's going to get produced, and the network will take a look at it, and they'll see if they like it or not. Then they'll say, go for full series or go for half series.
DC wants to desperately get the jump on Marvel doing Damage Control on Netflix.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one. Yeah. I love this.
I think this is being pitched to NBC, and this sounds like NBC sitcoms from a few years ago where we had things like The Office and Parks and Rec, and they started to try to do every kind of cameras in a workplace thing. What was the one that was overseas? It was everybody who were doing sort of tech support roles, and
oh,
it did not last very long.
Yeah, what was that called? Outsourced? Not outsourced.
That outsourced might be right, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't wind up watching that
one.
I keep
the IT Crowd, but that's a different one. But yeah, I think it was outsourced.
IT Crowd is hilarious. Don't even put that in the same category as those shows. IT Crowd is brilliant.
I'll tell you, though, I'm excited about this. I think DC has done a wonderful job on television. For as good as Marvel has been in the movies, I think DC has been that good on television. And they're smart because they seem to be diversifying. You've got Arrow and Gotham, which are both, you know, your dark, kind of grittier shows. And then you've got Flash that's a little dark and gritty, a little bit fun. And then you've got Legends of Tomorrow, which is all fun. You know, and now you're going to go and branch off and try something that's comedic. You know, and I know they do these sorts of things in the comics where they have a title that's, you know, largely you know, your Deadpools and your, you know, Squirrel Girls and things like that that are largely meant for the humor. So it makes sense for DC to kind of diversify a little bit, try to get into this as well. And I think it's also smart because they're spreading things around too, because you've got, you know, you're going to have Gotham on Fox, you're going to have Flash and Arrow and Legends on CW. I didn't even mention Supergirl, that's CBS, and then you'll have this on NBC. And they're not getting into ABC because ABC's Disney, Marvel, you're just not getting in there. But they're going to be everywhere, you know. So I think it makes a lot of sense for them to do this at this point and at least try it and see what happens with it.
Do you think it's going to – I hope it's not a traditional sitcom with a laugh track and filmed on video. You guys don't think they're going to do that, do you?
I hope not.
I doubt it'll be a laugh track. I see it more like The Office, Parks and Rec, where it was those single camera shows. I wonder, because they say it takes place in the DC universe, in a world of superheroes and villains, but they're kind of running dry on what characters they can insert into another show at this point. So are we going to see Nort from Green Lantern show up in this?
It's going to be the B and C level characters, I'm afraid. But that could actually be to their benefit, though, because they'd be more odd and weird, right?
Yeah. Well, one thing that people have been begging for quite a while is for Alan Tudyk to play Blue Beetle next to a Booster Gold played by Nathan Fillion. They want to see the blue and gold, and they want those two guys to do it. It makes sense for them to do a Super Buddies comedy show or film with those characters and those actors because they're so great together. Their Con Man movie looks fantastic. But at this point in time, I would like to see the older superheroes. And frankly, the Marvel superheroes, all those actors, not all of them, but a lot of them are in their 50s anyways.
Yeah, true enough.
Hugh Jackman.
Yep.
So
Robert Downey Jr. I mean, if you look at some of the great action heroes right now, Johnny Depp is in his 50s and he's going to play Captain Jack again. So it's not an age thing. I think it's an acting ability thing and in this case, comedic ability. I just wonder if this is going to be all focused in an office place or if they'll actually get to explore outside of it because the budget's come into play in that regard? Do we see superheroics in this? How much does that actually come across?
There's a they're an insurance agency, so they have to go out and do claims, right? They have to go to a building that was destroyed by this superhero fighting this supervillain, right? Or they have to get out of the office. Well, I mean, they don't have to, but that would make sense being an insurance agency.
There was a show a few years ago called Better Off Ted, which was just brilliant.
Yeah, that's a great
and
show.
And I want to see this kind of play in that regard, because one of the things Better Off Ted would do is when they would go to commercials, they would play a commercial based off the company that was in the show. And this show is screaming to have them make commercials that are like your average Geico and Progressive.com commercials and do all of those things and really play around with it. I want them to think outside of the box on some of this stuff.
One of these characters is like a fan of superheroes. Like, she's got plastered on her office cubicle like beefcake shots of superheroes. That seems like the possibility of maybe an act. I don't know what I'm trying to say there. That sounds funny to me.
I mean, the characters sound typical to those shows, though. I mean, this Pootie's character is a prankster. That doesn't sound far off from Jim in the Office.
Yeah. And then there's the over... No, he's actually the... Like the a-hole boss, right? No. That's
Tudyk.
Yeah, Tudyk. Yeah. So there's all the typical archetypal characters from this type of show. Definitely, you're right.
Yeah, and Vanessa Hudgens has got great charm. She's been building her acting chops for a long time, ever since she was one of those Disney kids.
I forgot Vanessa Hudgens is in Freaks of Nature.
Oh, we were talking about that tonight on the Alien Invasion podcast.
Yes. Great movie.
Sounds good. All right, so DC, stepping up to the comedy thing. I'm looking forward. I hope they do a good job with the pilot so it actually gets on the air next fall. Or next winter, one of the two.
But I am sort of looking forward to Damage Control more just because it's Dwayne McDuffie stuff.
Yes.
Explain, okay, it's kind of the same concept, but how's it different?
Damage Control is actually a contracting/construction company that repairs damage from superhero fights.
Oh, okay.
And, there's a whole cast of characters, and from what I remember from at least the first series, you really don't see, the heroes are peripheral. Occasionally a hero will fly by or whatever, and they'll talk about, inside jokes about certain heroes and the type of damage that they do, or villains and the types of damage that they do, but it's just really very tongue-in-cheek, very funny, and it's kind of like The Office before there was The Office, for all intents and purposes.
Is it going to be an official in the MCU? Like, is it going to be part of canon? Is it going to be part of the...
I would hope so.
There's no reason to think that Marvel wouldn't make it part of canon at this point. That seems to be what their whole model is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, quite honestly, it would fit pretty nicely into Netflix as a series.
So they could be cleaning up after like Daredevil or Jessica Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Although the big money lays with the Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make the most damage. All right, that's your news. Before we move on to the big question, got to remind you guys that we do have a Patreon account to help us pay for things like audio hosting and web hosting and stuff like that. The utility costs. Help us pay the utility bills, basically. Go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Pledge as little as $1 a month, but there are rewards if you pay if you pledge more. For example, $3 a month will get you an extra, like a newsletter with extra stories related to our podcast. Like there'll be a newsletter with maybe 5 or 6 sci-fi stories that we couldn't fit into episodes of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, or episodes related to the Podcast of Terror, or Adventure Party, or any of them, Exploring the X-Files, you name it. We do extra, do the newsletter, that's $3 a month. For $5, you get an extra episode of our podcasts, available exclusively to our patrons. So it's worth the money. And $5 a month, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket, right? So patreon.com/galacticnetcasts is the place to go. Please, you know, we're happy with your dollar a month, but we're even more happier for more. So please.
And you know what could make you happy? And I have to bring this up again. I bring it up every time because I think it's crazy that this exists. For this low ball price, you are breaking our back, sir, with this promise, but someone needs to jump on this. For $20 a month as your patronage, you can be in charge of creating and have us host a podcast of your choice and determination. You can have your own Galactic Netcast. Choose any of the hosts. Do you understand what kind of slave labor we're talking about here? $20 a month does not pay to keep the lights on, let alone me in like Nabisco biscuits. This is amazing. You need to jump on this. Only one person gets it. It could be you.
And it's only going to be as long as you keep that $20 a month pledge. So if you drop off, that podcast is going away. I'm just saying that right now.
Not to mention that Matt Stein hopes it is a cooking show.
No, we talked about that on the latest Weird World Weekly. We talked about the cooking show. So, you know what? We could do a Booster Gold Blue Beetle podcast. You know, so if you're a fan of those characters, we could do a podcast just about those two characters.
Hells yeah! Dancing on a high chair.
Because I still have, even after I'd cleared out my collection, there are two things that I will never get rid of, and that is my full collection of 24 issues of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
There you go. Set up. So somebody listening out there, if you're a fan of those two characters, give that $20 a month pledge. Go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Brad is ready. He's ready to do his fourth podcast a week.
Yay!
$20. Listen to his pain. Put him down.
All right, let's move on to the big question, and it's kind of tailored around our guests this week. Sometimes we do hypothetical questions, other times we do very specific things, and that's what this is this week. So I know that some of you have not seen much of the new series of The X-Files. Others on this panel have not seen a single episode. Talking to you, Corey.
Tisk, tisk, Corey.
Yeah.
My Comcast ordeal has been, it's been challenging.
Okay, so it's, we blame it on Comcast then.
Mostly.
Okay.
As well you should.
Okay. Yeah. So if you guys, if you don't want to be spoiled by this, I give you permission to mute your headphones and just kind of sit there for a while, and we can give you the thumbs up when we're done.
Because you'll be able to hear that in audio.
Smart ass.
I think he was talking to the. I think he was talking to the host, Brad. I think he was talking to you and me.
Yeah. Okay, for the listeners of the podcast, go ahead and fast forward, skip ahead to the ing section, and we'll be done talking about. We'll be done doing spoilers. Big question this week is: what did we all think of the X-Files revival? We kind of got into it a little bit at the start of the show. But let's talk about it in more detail this time. So, Sean, Kevin, I'm going to let you guys take the lead on this, and I'll kind of just throw my hat in once in a while. And, Brad, how much have you seen of the new episodes?
First two,
okay.
Oh, so, you're in for a treat with number three.
That's what I hear, and I can't wait to see it.
Now, okay, do we want to do spoilers or just want to do general?
No, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. You're not going to spoil. To me, it's the journey. So
okay. So overall, general impression. We talked about that already. Sean, what was your favorite episode of the new series? And I'll ask Kevin the same question.
See, you know, it's funny because Kevin and I just had that conversation, and that is such a hard question because they were all slightly different for different reasons. There was the one with the trash man that was an absolute tour de force for Gillian Anderson's acting. Mm-hmm. There's the Weremonster one, which I swear, if they made a series like that, it would be the funniest thing on television. I haven't laughed at anything in a long time like I did that night at that. The first and the last episodes go together, My Struggle 1 and 2, and it's kind of like I said earlier, it's that transition between old X-Files storytelling and new contemporary storytelling. I guess if I had to pick one episode to say it's my favorite, it would probably be this last episode, number 6. It had its issues. I'm not thrilled with the way it ended, you know, because there's a big question there, and we're not sure what the future of the series holds. So I'm a little bit nervous about that. But as far as the show goes, there was just so much X-Files in that show. It was just brimming with X-Files to me. So, you know, I would say that's one. And then the Were Monster one is kind of like 1A because it was so good. But it's like it's almost a different series, you know. It was so different than the other five. So,
well, the Were Monster one was written by Darren Morgan, who I've said many times is my X-Files writer. He did the War of the Carophaguses or whatever. I can't say that word. Always been the guy, my go-to for the X-Files.
Did he also write the classic series, the episode where they're talking to that true believer of aliens and UFO abductions, and they're getting the story wrong from
Jose Chung
from outer space?
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely. That was a Morgan and Wong for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, there's definitely pedigree for those kinds of episodes, but like I said, in that 6-episode arc, having that one there, it's very different from the other 5. So, you know, it was as good as it was. It's definitely, to me, it's kind of 1A because it's outside of and very hard to compare to the other 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose, if you put it in that perspective, including it in only 6 episodes, it really stands out more than if you were to have that episode among like 22 episodes in a season.
Yeah.
Kevin, what was your favorite?
Definitely episode 3, Mulder and Scully Meet the Were-Monster. I know it was second for him, but I just there was just so much about it that I loved. I mean, I love any comedy that I can sit through and just laugh straight through it. And we had to pause the TV at least 5 or 6 times because we were both laughing too hard and we didn't want to miss anything. And I mean, I have not laughed that hard in a long time.
And that episode made fun of themselves so much. There was a lot of inside jokes, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like.
Yeah.
Yeah, very self-referential. Mulder waking up in the graveyard because his phone's ringing and his ringtone is the X-Files theme song.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just
that's very meta.
Amazing. Very breaking the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Deadpool episode, kind of.
Yeah. Well, and the guy that they have playing him, Rhys Darby, is hysterical. And he's got such great delivery, the guy that's playing the Were-Monster. And, you know, we were talking earlier with the Twilight Zone thing about flipping things, you know, on their heads. And that's what they did with this. He was a lizard man who got bit by a human and therefore turned into a human, kind of like a reverse werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, so taking that classic trope and flipping it on its head really worked in that episode. And, you know, and Rhys Darby's hysterical.
Let me ask you guys what you thought of how they brought back the smoking man. Because we all thought he was, like, exploded, right? I mean, the series finale back in whenever, 2000, whatever, we thought, like, he was dead, right? But it turns out he wasn't.
No, you know, he's a great character. I think they used him very well as kind of the mastermind behind the whole thing, which he always has been. And man, I have said this, I think, on every episode of Exploring the X-Files so far. If this run does not get nominated for an Emmy for makeup, something is seriously wrong.
Yeah.
Every episode has had some outstanding piece of makeup and prosthetic work. And him in that hospital bed in the finale and him at the end when he takes the prosthetic off his face, it's just so real-looking, so creepy-looking, and just spot-on fantastic.
And, you know, the technology for doing makeup has probably, you know, gotten a lot better since the original series. So that's probably another reason why it looks so good, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've always been solid on the makeup stuff. The special effects were always kind of hinky, but, you know, you're talking about a 90s series with television budgets compared to what we're used to now. So, you know, going back and watching some of the older episodes, the effects are a little questionable, but the makeup has always been spot on. But even as good as it was back then, it's 100 times better now. I mean, it was just pure artistry.
And what I was really amazed at was how they took these new episodes and actually gave them a 90s X-Files feel, and the way the camera angles were and the lighting and the color. I think they tried to maybe match it up to those episodes back in the 90s. Don't you think? They had
It looked like it from what I saw.
Yeah. It kind of had, I mean, you could tell it was in this day and age, but it still had kind of, the lighting was the same as it was back in the 90s. I don't know, like I said, the camera angles were very similar as well.
You're right down to using the same opening sequence, the same theme songs, the same visuals and everything, not changing even a beat on there. You know, you look at their FBI ID badges in the opening, and they're the pictures from back then, so, mm-hmm. you know, they're 15 years younger in their badge pictures, and they did a really good job of continuity after so long.
You know, I guess I only have a couple of complaints, and they're just very minor. I think they tried to shoehorn too many terms and too many things to show off that time has passed, like technology wise, like, and tropes and just things that have developed in society between the time of the last movie or episode and this new series. I thought they were just like, it was too in your face, too on the nose sort of. That, and I thought the writing on the last episode was a little bit weak. I thought it was like they made Scully too much of a believer. I thought like it was, there was too many leaps and bounds in, suspending your disbelief on that last episode, in my opinion.
Kevin, did you get that impression? Like, we haven't really talked a whole lot about the finale because we haven't recorded that show yet, but
yeah.
Kevin, did you get that same impression about Scully?
I did. I think they did a lot of trimming with the script. I got the impression that they had a much fuller script to begin with, and then realizing that, because you always write more content than what you end up using, I think they realized, you know, that they had the 48 minutes and they knew when they wanted it to stop. And so they went through and just cut out everything that wasn't of the utmost importance to the script. And I think that might be why it kind of had that weak feeling, is a lot of the smaller details and things were missing from the episode. But I think that's just because they were trying to cram such a big, extensive story into such a small amount of time.
They could have done a 2-hour episode, that last one.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, is that the problem is that was too big of a story for one show, even though that was part two, technically, of the first one. That was really something that needed a movie treatment, that the story was too big for what they were trying to accomplish, and I think that's been in the fact that it really didn't end. You know, we were not at the end of the story when they ran out of episode. So I think you're right. I don't necessarily know if it's the writing is weaker for that. It could be, but to me, it's just they were overly ambitious with that last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are your hopes and dreams and what are you hoping for the next, if they do, which it sounds like they're going to do a second season of the revival, what are your hopes and dreams for that, guys?
Well, I can tell you that my theory is that we're going to see a resolution to the Mulder story that kind of got left hanging out there. We're going to see much more of the two new agents.
Yep, Einstein and
Miller.
Miller, yep.
Yeah.
Ronnie Raymond, as I like to call him.
Yeah. You know, I have issues with those two characters in that I think we didn't need carbon copy younger versions of Mulder and Scully to continue the story, but I kind of get that. But, you know, I think that's where this is heading. And I think depending on the resolution of the stories they started to tell Monday night, Mulder and Scully are going to be more in an advisory capacity. And I honestly don't see Gillian Anderson sticking around too much longer. I kind of have gotten the feeling from interviews and stuff that she was very happy to do this, but she'll also be just as happy to be done with it. And but David Duchovny seems a little bit more invested in the future of it, so will he?
Yeah, I could see.
And that's kind of where I think it's going to go.
Yeah, I could see him like running the show, kind of like not replacing Skinner, but kind of like ground level supervisor for those two.
Yeah.
And are the new agents any better or worse than Doggett and Reyes? I mean,
good question.
They were basically the other cousins of the Duke family that took over on the Dukes of Hazzard for a while.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Kevin hasn't seen them yet. But yeah, I think they are. See, here's the thing with those two characters. I think Miller is just enough different from Mulder to make him interesting. When Kevin and I were talking about it, Kevin made a really good point of what is driving Miller, like the sister's abduction drove Mulder, may be what separates those two characters and makes them different and makes Miller more interesting. Einstein's too much Scully, really, for me to find her interesting, so I think they started to break that mold a little bit in the sixth episode, and I hope they do more of that to make her a more distinct character, and then I think I would find her a lot more interesting. But yeah, right now, yeah, I'd say they are better than those two, but not by much.
I have a theory that I don't know. I haven't done the math yet on, so I don't know if it holds water, but how old do you think William Mulder and Scully's baby was the last time we saw him? Was he just an infant?
Yeah. I think what I read was he should be 17.
Okay. Because I had a theory in my head for
17.
I had a theory in my head for a while that Agent Miller was actually William, but that he would be too old, or William would be too young to match up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm 17, so he'd have to be right around my age.
Okay, I think that's something they'll explore in the second season, if they do the second season, that they'll actually find him, and that'll be a major part of the story for the second season. Or the
hey Dave.
Yeah,
I think he showed up at the very end, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. The big thing, the big ending there that kind of came out of the sky.
Oh.
I think William's there.
Okay. Okay. Got it. All right. I was like for a second going, did I miss something? Did they show him? I'm like, what?
No, that's just my wackadoodle theory, but, you know, we'll see.
Okay. Well, yours probably holds more water than mine does. Definitely.
I just hope this leads to the real revival that we're waiting for from these guys, and that would be Millennium.
No. Well, Millennium would be good, but I'm hoping for a Space Above and Beyond revival.
Totally different group.
No, it's not. It's Morgan and what's his face? That's their
Morgan,
show.
Morgan and Wong.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
No wonder Dave likes that show so damn much.
Yeah, bring it up as
not
much
Freaky
as possible.
Links, though? Not Freaky Links, Dave.
Not what?
Freaky Links.
What's that?
Which I think it was one of Carter's other shows that bombed.
No, I don't remember that one. At all.
Oh, I do remember that now that you mention it. Oh, God, that was terrible.
What was the premise?
Yeah. We'll just call it Tween Files.
Okay.
Yeah. How about a Lone Gunman? They even showed up in this new episode.
That's
so,
what
know,
I wanted to
run.
Know is if the Lone Gunman were going to somehow come back after they...
They kind of were part of one episode. Sort of. Kind of.
Yeah, they were part of a dream or delusion or
a drug
whatever you want to call
hallucination.
That.
Yeah.
5 or 6 more minutes of absolute fantastic television.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, how did IO9 described it as Mulder was God, what'd they say? High as something. High, I forget now. Somebody look that
Tripping
up.
Tripping balls.
Tripping balls. There you go. That was a... All right. That's
I still want to get the rings that say Mush and Room on them now.
Yes.
So.
All right. So that's our big question, X-Files talk. And if you want to hear more of that, please subscribe to Exploring the X-Files with Sean and Kevin on the Galactic Netcast Network in conjunction with Wolfking Studios, or I'm sure Sean would prefer Wolfking Studios in conjunction with Galactic Netcast. But
it's all good.
Either way, it's a joint operation. It's a multilateral whatever. And go to what's the short URL? It's gncasts.com/... X-Files?
I think it's just / X-Files.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's right.
Listen to it, subscribe to it, and give them feedback, because I'm sure they'd love to hear from you guys what you think of their podcast.
Oh, yeah. We love feedback and messages, whatever you guys want to send us.
Cool.
It's fine by us.
All right. For more about this podcast, you can go to gncasts.com/geeks. We've got links to our show notes, links to how to subscribe to the podcast. And for the rest of the network, all 9 shows, go to gncasts. That's gncasts.com. All right. Since the last time Corey and Sean were on, I have changed the name of the recommendations to ing, I-N-G, as in what we're watching, reading, listening to, playing, etc. They're all, I figured out that they're all, they all end with ing, basically. So I'm first on the list, but I want to let somebody else go. I'm looking forward to hearing what Corey has to say, because I was hoping that he would bring this up. Corey, what's your ing?
My ing... We can go with posting on my part, but it's reading for everybody else. So some people know that I write comics from time to time. I do a comic strip called Bowyer, although it's been in semi-retirement for a couple years now, unfortunately, with my friend Levi Krause, the creator of it. He and I met when he was doing, or just starting to launch, a comic book he did in the mid-90s. Called Levi's World. Levi's World came out, did a complete 6-issue run. It was collected into an original graphic novel called Insanity is a Virtue. Fantastic. I mean, we'll say up front, Tom Arrett's wife works at YouTube. No, I mean, I am best friends with Levi Krause, and so I maybe am a bigger fan than some people would be, but I was a fan from the moment I saw his work. It's kind of like Garfield and Calvin and Hobbes taken to a huge degree of Sergio Aragonés, of Gru fame, where he just fills up a page to no end. Like, there's space not left on a page because it's filled with characters and actions and things happening that you can just stare at it for hours. And that's pretty much what Levi's World started with. So it's got some dimension hopping, some aliens, some interesting transdimensional zipper creatures called dotes, space fleas. It just goes crazy, and it's mostly about these two kids trying to get out of what is essentially an abusive household. It is brilliant. And so Levi finally gave me permission and scanned all the pages. So we are putting it online, because you cannot find the graphic novels anymore. Anytime I see one wind up on eBay, I swoop it up. So we're putting it out there for free. So if you go to don'taskcomics.com, you can find a link to all of the different strips that Levi works on, be it Levi's World, Bowyer, Strobe, Shock with our friend Scott Hall, and even some more stuff is coming up. You can read the first 3 pages that we posted today, and I'm going to be posting them weekly on Thursdays for the foreseeable.
You guys have quite the empire starting up over there. It's developing even more. I mean, it's been developing over the years, but it seems like that's a great addition to Don't Ask Comics.
Yeah, I mean, this is the original Don't Ask Comic, but he's got so much work that he's done and so much work that he's still hoping to do, and I have a comic that I've been trying to develop with him for a number of years as well, besides Bowyer. And all of these things are going to wind up on Don't Ask Comics. We're going to try to get them all under that one banner head. And yeah, it's great. It's nice to have something where this can all land. And he was posting these things on a blog spot which is just not conducive to reading. So I had been seeing things about Comic Press, which is a WordPress theme.
Yep, I've heard of that.
And it just works so much better. So I started putting this together for him. I am not a great web programmer, but I kind of got these things down pat. I put two new sites together today, and the Levi's World site I put together earlier this week after you invited me to be on this episode because I thought maybe I get to talk about it on here.
Well, there you go. You just did. Yay. I'm looking forward to reading these, definitely.
It is one of my favorite stories of all time.
All right. I'm going to do, I don't know how to describe this thing. I guess looking. See, it works with anything. So this is, let me try to get, do you guys see this on camera? Because I'm looking at the dock right now. Okay.
Yeah, I can see it.
So this is Star Wars, a poster collection. This was part of my three-pronged birthday gift from my wife. She got me this. She got me some Doctor Who socks and a 75th anniversary Justice Society comic collection. It's like
nice.
Best stories of Justice Society. I'm super excited. I'm reading the first one, which is like, it's really hard to read comics from that era, like 1941. Oh my God. It's like the dialogue is terrible. The stories, it's really, but I'm looking forward to finishing it and moving on. Like, they have stories all throughout the history of the Justice Society, and it's really, really cool. But anyways, this was the third thing. This is, and for all the YouTube videos, you can watch it. If you're not watching us on YouTube, go ahead, youtube.com/galacticnetcast. And we also have the YouTube video on the front page of our website as well. But this is Star Wars, a poster collection, and these are all like either original concept, like this is episode 4, A New Hope, the classic image of Vader and Death Star and the X-Wing fighters, a muscle-bound, six-packed Luke Skywalker, and a sexed-up Princess Leia there. But they run the gamut. There's the original concept art. Then there's stuff from just a few years ago, like some very esoteric, like, different styles. Like, here's Tatooine in a very, I don't know what style this is, but it reminds me of something I've seen before. Just a bunch of characters in the sand from Tatooine. There's Jabba the Hutt. There's a speeder, C-3PO, Obi-Wan, all those great characters from episode 4. But it's pretty amazing. There's like a horror poster styled one here somewhere. Let me find it. So if you're a Star Wars fan, this is their poster. It's a poster collection where you can rip them out and put them in frames, but you can keep them in the book too, obviously. But this is a horror film style. Isn't that great?
For those who are listening, it is a Rancor themed horror movie poster.
So yeah, that's my pick. I'm looking forward to just looking at these from time to time. Oh, I love this one. It's little Luke and little Leia with their father, Darth
Vader.
There
is a series of books about the young Luke and young Leia hanging out with their dad, Darth Vader, from that same artist. They're really just extraordinarily cute.
And then here's a bunch of Ewoks on top of each other. On a tauntaun? Is that a tauntaun?
That's just going to make him smell worse on the outside.
And how cute is that? That's super cute. Anyways.
Oh, God. Now I have the Ewok centipede idea in my... Oh.
Yeah. No. Oh. Bad Corey. Bad Corey.
Oh, they can't even say it.
Bad Corey.
Oh, that's awful. You can find me every week on the Podcast of Terror here on Collecting the Network.
Bad Corey.
It was bound to happen. We're bound to go down that road. So
bound to each other.
So if you watch our podcast, you may see some of those posters behind me from episode to episode. I'm going to put a spot somewhere back here where I can display those, a different one each episode. So that's my pick. We'll have the link to the Amazon offering of this. And if you want to buy that, a small percentage of proceeds will go to help us pay for things, just like the Patreon account does. So, all right, who wants to go next with their ing?
Well, I can.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
I actually am going to do something different that I put on the doc because it just struck me that this would be really appropriate and you guys might really enjoy this. But one of the other shows that I do called I'd App That, we just started and recorded episode one. And one of the apps that we reviewed is an app called Lifeline, which starts out, you get this message from someone named Taylor just asking, you know, hello, is anybody out there?
Oh.
And the entire game is played with just two buttons. You only have two responses each time. And Taylor is trapped on another planet, has no idea where he or she is, and you have to try and help guide them. And one of the cool things I really enjoyed about this game is apps that make me wait to play annoy me to no end. You know, Candy Crush or whatever, you're out of lives, you got to come back and, you know, forget that. This game, you send Taylor off to do something, and it's 4, 5, 6 hours later, Taylor will message you and say, okay, I just arrived at the spot. And so it really adds a sense of just, you know, danger and realism. And, you know, half the time I'm sitting there checking, like, you know, I'm looking for messages, like, you know, when Kevin goes to a friend's house and I'm waiting for him to message me that he arrived safely. I'm doing the same thing with Taylor going, you know, damn it, Taylor, where are you? Why aren't you messaging me? You know, and it's a really cool just, and it's so simple. It's all text and two buttons, and it's just amazing storytelling is what makes the app. And so I would definitely recommend people pick that up. It was a lot of fun to go through, and, you know, and of course the nice thing is you end up killing Taylor, you can always go back and restart, unlike when that happens to your actual kids, they tend not to let you restart.
What's it called again?
It's called Lifeline.
Okay.
You can also listen to Sean's parenting podcast.
And Kevin's got an...
If you kill your
Kevin's
kids,
made it 17.
They don't let you bring them back.
Kevin's got a very uncomfortable look on his face right now.
Yeah. Kevin's just trying to figure out if he loves Taylor more than me or not.
Kevin's used to me by now.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, it reminds me of...
It's a lot of fun.
It reminds me of the old text adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
Like your Oregon Trail and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Zork.
Yeah, very much so.
Zork.
Yep.
All
right, cool.
I just bought it. It was a great recommendation.
Okay.
You'll have a lot of fun with it, I think.
What's it called again? One more time?
Lifeline.
Lifeline.
Okay.
And the podcast is I'd App That.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right, who wants to go next? Anybody want to go next? Anybody else have an ing?
I do.
Okay.
I am watching Interstellar, finally.
Ooh.
And I'm in the home stretch right now, and it's been visually stunning, but not, like, distractingly so. And knowing the fact that they've, like, had real science behind this lends a lot of... a lot of authenticity and coolness to it. So I'm really, really enjoying the heck out of it. And I'm kind of, at this point, I'm really, I think when I'm done with this, I'm going to watch the end of the film because I really want to know what happens at this point.
The end is crazy. It'll mess you up, the end of Interstellar.
That's kind of, I kind of suspect a couple of things that I think are going to happen. Because they alluded to a couple of things, and I have a feeling that he's the one that basically goes back in time, and because he's manipulating gravity to signal to Murphy to give her the answers that she's looking for. So I'm kind of curious as to how that's they're going to actually do it.
Hmm. I think you'll like it. It's a great film. It's pretty. It's a pretty film.
Nice.
All right, Kevin, you don't have anything next to your name, so does that mean that you have nothing, or do you have something that you want to add? Or it's okay that you don't.
I didn't type anything in just because I didn't know I was supposed to.
Okay.
but I will share something with you guys that I was never like a huge sci-fi fan until recently. I've been starting to get into it. But one of the things, aside from the X-Files, that helped me to kind of introduce myself to sci-fi and aliens and, you know, futuristic technology and everything is actually an online Dungeons & Dragons comic that I read called Order of the Stick.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got some sci-fi elements with, especially when the gnomes come into play later in the series, they've got, you know, the giant airships and everything going on and... it's just a really cool comic online by a man named Rich Burlew. I think I pronounced that right. B-U-R-L-E-W.
I believe
so. It's from Giant in the Playground, which is giantitp.com. And I'm all caught up. I went through and read it. There's like, I think 1,025 issues so far.
Wow.
Wow.
It's been going on for a long time. It is a well-known and beloved comic. I think that it was in Dungeon Magazine for a while when it was still coming out, or Dragon Magazine, one of the two.
Oh, it's possible, yeah. Yeah, it started in 2003, and they're still putting out new strips for it. So,
what's your favorite part of this comic?
I definitely like the characters. It focuses on these six main characters who are all part of the same adventuring party, and they call themselves the Order of the Stick, hence the name of the comic. And I just love the dynamic between the characters, and they always find ways to single out like two characters at a time to have their own like adventure or storyline, so they get to play with all of the different relationships between the characters, and I just love each and every one of them.
Cool. All right.
It's a truly excellent series, and it, the artwork is very simple. It's kind of like if the characters from Cyanide and Happiness picked up medieval weapons and went adventuring, but it just works so perfectly.
All right. We'll have the links to all of our ings in the show notes, and you can check them out for yourself. They all sound awesome. I'm going to download Lifeline especially. I'm going to check that out very, very soon. All right. Feedback. We would love to hear what your thoughts are on all the stuff that we talked about tonight or any episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Please leave us an email at geeks@gncasts.com. That's geeks@gncasts.com. You can also voicemail us. Leave us a voicemail, 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Please subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star rating and write a short review. It doesn't have to be like a whole like diatribe something. I don't know if I'm using that word right. Like a whole paragraph. It can be just a couple sentences. What's that, Corey?
I said pewty.
Pewty?
Tudic. I'm just letting you know.
Oh, okay. So write a review, please. Give us 5 stars. That would be awesome. We're also available on Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can leave a comment on this episode there as well. All subscription options and links can be found under the subscribe tab at gncasts.com. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Thanks to Sean and Kevin Burns for being our guests this week. Before we leave, where can people find, well, Exploring the X-Files or anything else that you want to push to people?
Well, I guess Exploring the X-Files, the best place to go would either be right to gncast.com/X-Files or, excuse me, follow us on Twitter at X-FilesCast. I really just want to say thank you to Galactic Netcast for joining up with us for this. This has been a really fun relationship that we've had over this show. And, you know, Kevin and I have felt very welcomed and very supported on the network. So I just wanted to take a moment on the show to say thank you to Dave and thank you to everybody on the network for that. It's been a real joy to do that. And then Kevin, you follow him. But Kevin, what's your Twitter again?
At WolfKingKevin.
Right, and I'm at WolfKingPodcast. So you can follow us or follow the show and keep up to date with what's going on.
And you can also find Exploring the X-Files on Facebook.
Okay.
Yes.
So right. That's the other easy place to get a hold of us, because I check our Facebook page constantly.
Excellent. Well, thanks for suggesting that you come on the network, because if it wasn't for you, Sean, we wouldn't have had this hookup. So thanks for the suggestion. We're glad to have you, and you're an awesome addition to the network.
Well, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Gregor, Corey, Matt is in the corner. He's waking up from his stupor, and he wants to say something. So, Matt, what do you want to say?
Bye, Dad.
Okay. All right. Anessa, JF, Sean, and Kevin, we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.